Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 23rd of July, 2012, and today I'm talking on the line once again to David L. Smith, a British-Swiss dual national who also has a law degree and a chartered accounting qualification. His background includes positions in general management, finance, private equity, startups, business development, turnarounds, and much, much more. He's at GenevaBusinessInsider.blogspot.com. So David L. Smith, it's great to have you on the program again. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be back. Thanks a lot.
Well, Mr. Smith, today I wanted to start talking about the Eurozone crisis and the collapse that that has been going on for some time now, and unfortunately shows no signs of abating with some of the latest news indicating that once again, the Euro is hitting multi-year lows as there are fresh concerns about a Spanish bailout. Let's talk a little bit about this crisis and how it really began and where you think this is going to end up.
Okay, well, I think the crisis began more or less with the foundation of the euro, which was not really on a solid base at all. It was an attempt to politicize an idea rather than to have a true economic platform for which could function. So you ended up with countries with enormous disparities of economic capability, of education, of training, of people working in the countries, of industrial production base. And you put them all into one great big, what has turned out now basically to be one great big prison cell for some and one sort of paradise for others who are able to profit from the situation. So you have the poorer countries such as Greece or basically in broad terms the southern part of Europe, who are in the same boxing ring, as you like, with a great big gorilla called Germany and one or two other smaller gorillas who kind of got onto the shirt tails of Germany and who functioned pretty well. Now, the key issue, I mean, when I've lived and traveled in Europe very extensively over the years, the key issue is the fact that they're locked into a common currency with a common interest rate. Now, in the good old days, when you could go to Spain and buy things in pesetas and the interest rates in pesetas were 14 or 15%, the system was more or less self-correcting because you wouldn't borrow money at 14 or 15% unless you had an extremely good reason for it. So it avoided situations of massive debt being built up because the businesses that could have built it up just simply did not produce the cash flow to be able to pay the interest charges. Similarly, you know, if the country had a currency which was being devalued all the time, then to make it attractive, the interest rates, higher interest rates, were quite good. And there was, at the beginning, to my mind, I'm a subscriber to a euro project to the extent that it remains a project which is based on creating open markets and freedom of movement of goods and services across the borders. But by trapping everyone into this one interest rate, one exchange rate system, it disadvantages the weaker countries enormously. If I take Germany, for example, their capabilities in terms of production, they produce the same things 30% cheaper, which is exactly why the Greeks don't make BMWs but import them. So it is a trap for them. And as of the moment, although Germany is complaining bitterly about all the injustices of having to bail out other countries, the reality is that the other country's weakness creates a very low exchange rate for Germany, an excellent export market of captive countries to export to. It allows Germany, via the weak euro, to compete very effectively with the US. And if you saw in the Japanese market this morning, the euro is still falling, which means that if Germany wants to export anything either to the US or elsewhere in the world, it's in an extremely good position to do so. So my basic observations.
Well, as you say, I think it's something that's been hardwired into the currency in the way that this came together, the inherent faults of it. And unfortunately, what we've seen over the past several decades, really, even since the 1950s, as leaked documents from the second ever meeting of the Bilderberg Group in 1955 have indicated, really the hoi polloi, the hoity-toity of the European superstructure have always been really lusting after this idea of a single currency. As it starts collapsing down around them in this flaming mess that's leaving scarred hulking burnouts like Greece and Spain in its wake. What do you think is going to be the likely reaction from this European political class that's been arguing for the euro for so long? Do you think they're just going to give up on the project, or are they going to try for some sort of deeper integration?
I think that the answer is very definitely that the political elites and the financial elites are going to want total integration and total control. I mean, the most significant thing I've seen in the last few weeks is the clear statement that they want to have a European Central Bank. And Mrs. Lagarde at the IMF, who is very much European at heart, although she does show French signs once in a while, also wants exactly the same thing. You have one currency, everything integrated, one tax system, one central bank, and you basically produce for Europe all the problems that has been created by the Fed in America for America. Now, that is a globalist dream, but it's certainly, to my view, not what is interesting for the individual countries, because they lose their sovereignty, they lose their ability to tax in their own way, to live in their own fashion, and they become part of one great big European animal farm. And that is, for me, with a kind of libertarian approach, not that I'm clearly politically libertarian, but with a respect for human beings and their dignity and their freedoms, I think this is a very, very bad thing.
What is your take on the way that this Eurozone crisis has really fallen out into the austerity debate, with leaders lining up either to force austerity on, or to want to force austerity on the peoples of Greece, for example, or Spain, and those who are fighting against it, supposedly like a Hollande, supposedly providing the anti-measures? Where do you position yourself in that debate, or do you think it's a false paradigm?
Well, I think there's been a lot of talk about austerity in a number of countries so far. I mean, in the UK, austerity has been talked about for ages. I know it's not part of the Eurozone, the euro. But that austerity so far hasn't translated into any reduction of national debt at all. It's just political blah, blah, blah in order to try and protect the pound from being the next currency to be attacked. If you look at the other countries, such as Greece, I mean, I spent my daughter's just come back from holiday in Greece a couple of days ago, in ideal circumstances, on a beautiful island in a big villa, and nobody feels anything. However, if you get down, you speak to the people in the street, you can go into pharmacies and you can't buy any drugs off the shelf. You can go to hospitals, things are simply not functioning. They don't have drugs to treat people for cancer. So there's extreme hardship behind this austerity, and the only demands that seem to be coming from the center is, an inflexible situation from Germany saying, you know, please pay us the interest, otherwise we cannot negotiate with you. Now, I have to say I respect the Germans' point of view, but the trouble is you have two immovable forces slowly moving together, and I do believe that the only solution for Greece on a human basis and on an economic basis is for them to exit and reduce the austerity and simply look at the debts which have been built up and say, well, these are unpayable, and go into a kind of a Chapter 11 situation from which most people and most companies come out perfectly well. But if you reach a point where debt is unsustainable, whether or not you've lied about it to get into that situation in the first place or not, becomes irrelevant, because you can't get out of the situation. So what should happen is you put the country back on a solid footing, and then you turn your attention to the people who lied, and you take the appropriate criminal measures against them. Whether that will happen remains to be seen.
Unfortunately, it becomes less likely with each passing year, but I think you're exactly right. The people who were responsible for that have to be held accountable. And of course, in the Greek example, we now know about the deals that were done between the Greek government and Goldman Sachs to hide some of the levels of Greek debt in order to get Greece into the Eurozone. So certainly there are people who are responsible for that, but so far have not been held to account. Well, the entire Eurozone crisis took on kind of a different inflection last year when some really remarkable events unfolded politically with with the ousting of Papandreou in Greece and the parachuting in of people like Mario Monti in Italy, basically at the behest of the European political elite, these technocrats were put into these positions in ostensibly to help matters, although it really hasn't seemed to have that effect so far. What can you say about the way that that any pretense of democracy has already started to suffer in this struggle, and what does that say for how this is going to play out in the future?
Well, I think both in Greece and in Italy so far, it has been a political coup, and one should call it for what it is. Now, once again, if that actually brings the wonderful desired results, then perhaps the end justifies the means. Personally, I don't believe that. I believe that you should not be doing such things. However, if you look, let's look at Italy for a moment. You can see Mr. Berlusconi and his bunga bunga days are temporarily over, but the reality is he's standing on the sidelines. He has handed step back and without too much fuss and given power to someone who's now completely trapped as well. And the reality is that the financial situation doesn't change because you change one guy sitting at the top. You can maybe get a little more transparency on that financial situation, but in my career, I've been several times in the role of running companies in severe difficulties, and it takes a long time to sort it out, and you need the cooperation of people to do it. Now, what you have with are all these kind of technocratic governments is they do not have political legitimacy, and at the same time, people expect extraordinary results. And what is obvious at the moment is Monti is fully aware that he cannot deliver, and he's in a state of panic, and he's begging for money from the ECB because the problem is insoluble without massive injections of freshly printed cash from the ECB.
So for example, in the French political in the French political context, we had last year, or earlier this year, I should say, we had Sarkozy voted out and Hollande voted in, and he was the socialist who was going to bring the anti-austerity measures. But so far, what we've seen is more talk and floating of the idea of joint venture of euro bonds issued for infrastructure projects, which really, I think, only served to strengthen the position and the function of the European Central Bank, ultimately, at the end of the day. Do you think there is a third way? Is there another alternative out of this that does not involve the strengthening of the ECB and the power that it would wield in such a future European society?
If you look at the way things are at the moment, France would appear to be the stronger country. I think this is pretty much of a facade, because the reality of it is France and their banks are massively exposed to Italy and to Spain. They could be looking on losses of $500 billion, which is far more than the total capitalization of all the French banks. So the French banks, if Spain and Italy go under, would need to be recapitalized, and that would put France into a horrible situation. The only rating agency who are honest about this in any way are Egan Jones, who also downgrade the US and get a great deal of grief for having done so. But these are the realities, and François Hollande is a good French socialist who knows what to say to get elected, and at the end of the day, whether he can deliver or not, he's president. So I have great skepticism that he can bring anything to the table. And as soon as the others get into even deeper trouble, France is going to be looking for a bailout as well. Now, when you get to that point, you are down to very limited alternatives, because the only source of money is money printing, because Germany may have a few hundred billion they could kick in, but they also have exposures to these countries at the same time. And the only way to cure the problem big time is to print 1 trillion, 2 trillion, 3 trillion of money at the European Central Bank. Now, I think Mr. Draghi is just sitting on the sidelines smiling like the cat waiting to be served the cream, because he knows at the end of the day there is no way out of this situation. And he knows that eventually the politicians will push the can down the road, or roll the can up the hill, if you like, until it comes rolling back down on them. And then they'll come screaming to the central bank. They'll break all the rules, and then the money will be printed, and everyone will say things are okay. Now, that is alternative one, which I most sincerely hope does not happen. The other alternative is a very, very tough alternative for the countries involved, which is to take a deep breath, tell their citizens that there is a situation of national bankruptcy, that they can either sell their souls to the European bankers and the Eurocrats for the next many generations, or they can bite the bullet and say we're leaving and have a very tough 2 or 3 years like Iceland did. But at the end of the day, they will come out of it because they'll have cleared their debt off. They'll have made their currencies competitive. Tourists will start flowing back into the southern European countries where at the moment they're nervous to go. Real estate in those countries, which is unsaleable at the moment because of the high value in euros, would maybe fall to half the price. And in a relatively short space of time, these countries could actually recover. And they would leave the debts, the unpayable debts, where they should fall, which is on the people who profited from them in the first place.
Well, that's an interesting point. Given that wealth is neither really created, wealth as opposed to paper money is neither really created or destroyed during these financial crises, who do you think is going to ultimately benefit from this crisis?
Well, I think it's a battle at the moment between the elitist and the banks and the peoples. And so far, it's certainly 15 love for the banks, if not advantage for the banks. Where it will end up depends on the courage that people have to deal with their national issues and the courage their politicians have to stand up to a European masterclass who want to tell them all what to do. And the big trouble is that, a politician gets elected on one platform and then he's immediately subjugated by the system. And that is something which is not unique to Europe. It's totally transparent that that happens in the US as well.
Indeed so. Well, you occupy an interesting position sort of in the middle of Europe geographically, but very much on the periphery in terms of the Eurozone. And obviously as a British Swiss dual national, you have that kind of peripheral outside looking into all of this. How does that position inform what you see and what do you think about the British and Swiss position in this crisis?
Mm. Well, I tell you just as a general comment, I watch quite a lot of talk radio and things like that, and I notice a lot of people in America commentating on Europe, and they can often be well-informed, but there's a difference between being well-informed and having a real feel for it because you actually live in the country and you know what it's about. It's a bit like you're talking about Fukushima and the like. It's just down the road for you, so it is very real, and you see people who are involved in it. This weekend, for example, I spent time with a couple of Greeks, some Spanish, several French, and so on, and these are day-to-day contacts. It makes a big, big, big difference in feeling. I think if you come back on the specific question about living in Switzerland and knowing the UK, Switzerland is and has always really been a kind of turning point point for many of the good and the bad things that have happened in Europe, and obviously the last war was a fine example with all the allegations of Swiss banks holding stolen money from Germany, etc., etc. So we are very close to everything, and most of the people who live here in the financial sector are very well aware of what's going on. Most of them don't work in Switzerland. Most of them work with exterior markets. So it's a small town with a very good perception of what's going on. And I think that the comments I've been making up to now would reflect a lot of the sentiments. One thing I think is important to say, and I think the Swiss banks in Switzerland is extremely criticized at the moment for their numbered bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera. And I think I can say from my own personal experience that a money laundering issue such as happened between Mexico and the US with the aided and abetted by HSBC, that could not happen in Switzerland 30 years ago perhaps. But as of today, if you come to a bank with large amounts of cash, they will not open an account for you. If you're an American citizen, they won't open an account for you. They have a culture of control and of client, what was that, knowing your client, which does not exist in America. And if I wanted to launder money, I would actually probably open a company in Delaware and a bank account in Nevada and be pretty sure that the people who are actually dealing with things would not take any interest in what's going on. So I think to that extent, Switzerland is much maligned, when in fact it is at the leading edge of everything to do with knowing your client, avoiding these kind of issues. On the UK side of things, I'm less involved because although I come from there, it's been a long time since I lived there. However, the politics there at the moment and the corruption there are absolutely dreadful. And in very large measure, the UK system is polluted by the US system. But the UK is very frequently used as an offshore center to do the US dirty work for Wall Street. So if you look at the scandals that we've had over the last several years, if you talk of MF Global, you talk about the money laundering with HSBC being involved, you talk about the metals manipulation, gold and silver manipulations in the London Metal Exchange. The list goes on and on and on. Many of these scandals, the dirty work is done in London. The J.P. Morgan whale, for example, he wasn't in Wall Street.
Exactly right. Well, then finally, I hate to ask a question that would presume that you have some sort of crystal ball. Of course, none of us do, but just assuming the status quo is maintained, what do you believe will be the likely way that this Eurozone crisis will play out, and what kind of time frame are we looking at?
If I had the answer to that, I would be a rich guy today, because I would be doing what the big banks are doing for myself. I don't know, but I think that we're getting very close to the end. The situation in Spain is unsustainable. It is unsustainable at three levels. It's unsustainable because our banking system has been bankrupt. It's unsustainable because our government is bankrupt. It is unsustainable because their local regions are bankrupt. And all that has changed in a matter of 6 months. And now everyone is asking for a bailout because they don't want to be the last to ask for money, because they know there won't be any left over. So Spain is doomed, and the 100 billion is a complete joke. I made a tentative estimate and said it's probably nearer to 500 billion. Then we go across and we look at Italy. You have exactly the same situation unfolding, where it's maybe a few months away, but I thought at April time that the situation in Italy would have come to a Spanish-type crisis before now. But it cannot sustain itself for more than another few months. So I think if I come back on the other side of it, the supposed payer, Germany, as I've said before, Germany is very happy with the situation because every month they gain. Their export markets continue, their exchange rates are favorable, their unemployment keeps going down. So the longer they keep the other countries suffering, the better. So they don't want to resolve it, and the other countries don't want to face up to the problem. So it will end up one day where the market actually takes over and the market solves the problem, because nobody wants to buy the bonds, nobody believes the stories anymore, and liquidity will completely dry up. And then there will be only one overnight source of solution, which is the ECB. And my prayer at that point is that most of these countries say, we do not want to go into servitude, we want to get out. Now, what happens, I don't know, but that would be what I'd like to happen.
But as you note, unfortunately, they've gotten very good at rolling that can up the hill. So we'll see how many times they can do that before it threatens to crush them all. Well, some very, very interesting points to be made, and obviously a lot more to be said. So I hope people will go to check out the Geneva Business Insider at genevabusinessinsider.blogspot.com, where David Smith has regular updates about Europe and many other aspects of the economy, the LIBOR scandal, etc. So David Smith, thank you so much for your time today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.